All right, go ahead, talk. Say, you're listening to the Word Bros Podcast.
No.
Do it.
No.
Do it. Say, you're listening to the Word Bros Podcast. Do it. You're listening to the Word Bros Podcast. TheWordBros.com. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Word Bros Podcast. My name is Bob France. Hello.
And I'm Kevin Cuff. How are you guys doing?
Yeah, I'm trying to keep the intro a little lower key this time around because we had some...
We're going
to
play swanky music?
We had feedback from some listeners saying it sounded a bit too chaotic, so we're trying to make it a little more soothing for the for the Word Bros intro.
Trying to make it more smooth.
Yeah, try to make, I don't know, smooth, but I guess I'm going soothing. What I'll do is I'll make a new piece of production for it. If it's maybe it'll be like, you know, that maybe
like loungy,
some relaxation music, or like maybe like water trickling down a hill or
why
something.
Why don't you do like, Richard Cheese? Like that's, you know.
I hate Richard Cheese. No, I'm not doing it. Not a fan. I hate Richard Cheese, and I hate that Dan Band guy. Like that Dan Band guy I want to punch in the face.
Which guy?
The Dan Band. Do you remember that movie, Old School?
Yes.
Do you know the band at the wedding?
No, I don't remember.
Okay, well, there was a band. They sang Total Eclipse of the Heart, and they were called the Dan Band.
Okay.
And based on the success of that film and their appearance in that film, they actually became like a touring act. And when I was doing commercial radio, they were playing a local venue, and we had to interview them. And the Dan of Dan Band was one of the most boring individuals I've ever met before in my whole life. But that's either here nor there. He was just incredibly dull. For someone that we thought would be a really fun interview, it was the exact opposite. He was just like, man. So that was...
He's like, I'm Dan.
Yeah, you know? Like, great. Like, I had no idea you were a mute. But anyway... very exciting episode this week. Thank you for everyone who's been downloading the podcast. Thank you to everyone who's been sharing. Thank you to everyone who's been sharing it on social media, the tweeters, the Facebooks, all that stuff. We really appreciate it because that's how the podcast will grow, if you will.
And you get our swanky Word Bro love.
Yes. And this week we have a very special guest, Christopher Sabella. He is, we're going to talk to him about his new Kickstarter, Short Order Crooks, and a bunch of other stuff.
I can't lie. I'm really excited about talking to him.
Yeah, it was cool. Well, he was promoting his Kickstarter and he was like, he was on Twitter just asking people, hey, I'm looking to do some interviews for my Kickstarter. Who wants in? And I just kind of threw at him. I don't even think we recorded the first episode yet. We had just talked about doing the podcast.
No, we did. Yeah.
Yep. And I was like, hey, we got a pod. And he was like, cool, let's do it. So at that point, we were kind of under the gun to actually sit down and record this. And this is three episodes in. And so far, we've had on what?
This would be four.
This is the fourth episode. Wow. So we've had four episodes.
Four episodes of Word Bros. And for the most part, we've gotten good responses. So
yeah, I'm not going to, you know what? I'm not going to break my arm patting myself on the back or you for that matter. But wow, we're really great at this.
I wouldn't go that far, but
I would.
We have a lot of fun, so that's all that matters. And I think people recognize that we have a lot of fun together.
Yeah, and we have our own kind of strange perspective on making comics and about the grind that it is. And it's nice to hear. We already recorded the interview, but the insights and the kind of advice and the perspective that you get from Christopher Sabella is very refreshing to hear too, no matter where you are in your comic journey. If you're, you know, starting out banging out your first script, or you've been doing this for a really long time and you're just shooting pitches out to places and you're sitting at the comic book shop reading your own books on the shelves. So, you know, wherever you are, it's a really great perspective. So it's very cool. We want to thank
you. And even if you're a fan that wants to know how the sausage gets made.
Yeah. Which sometimes I don't recommend that.
No, I mean, it might ruin your experience of reading. Yeah. But
it is still pretty neat to hear how it gets made. And speaking of sausage, we had a wonderful time at the Tidewater Comic Con over the weekend. What a fantastic show put on by Mike Federale and his gang. The support that we got for our new book, Full Moon.
It was amazing.
I mean, it was great, man. Like, it was wonderful. Like, it was just...
People came out in droves to support it, and I don't think, honestly, it was for you or I. It was for the man of the hour, Alfredo Torres.
Yeah, we're going to have him on the podcast, too. But, I mean, like, you know, I was telling my wife that Alfredo is kind of Mickey Mouse in that town anyway. Like, he's the unofficial mascot of Virginia Beach, and making a comic book about him, like, loosely based on his appearance, it was just destined to succeed. And he was so great, and he was so gracious, and he was signing autographs and doing all that stuff. But it also helps that the book is good. Like, if we made a book about Alfredo where he was the main character and somebody picked it up and went like, oh, this art's fucking terrible, this writing sucks, they wouldn't buy it. The fact that it was all kind of in a nice package,
it kind of went together. It was kismet. All like came together, and then people liked what we did with the book. And then When you pitch it, like, it's basically Ghostbusters meets Indiana Jones.
Yeah, with a talking monkey.
I mean, why not?
How can you beat that?
It's everything you want and more.
Yes, and it's Indiana Jones in a Hawaiian shirt with the Ghostbusters and a talking monkey. It's a really great book. It was received very well. Monty was received very well. I sold out all of my trades, which was awesome.
That was great.
Yeah, Kevin sold some Oathbound there. He didn't leave them there because people came by the next day and was like, hey, I wanted to.
I only had two left.
I could have sold both of them.
I showed up with 10. I left with two.
That's good, man. I mean, everybody was selling. And it was cool, too, because we got to run up with some people. We got to meet some people we haven't met before. I got to see a good friend of mine, Sheila. I can't pronounce her last name. So Valari. She runs geek.com, which is a really great website. You should check that out. We're going to have her on the podcast as well. We met her lovely boyfriend, Ben McCool, who's some fancy British dude.
He was very nice.
He was. We're probably going to have him on the podcast. We just got to – we had a lot of conversations. We met a lot of nice people. We reunited, and it felt so good with a lot of people too. It was a wonderful show. Federale, well,
thank you Virginia Beach, thank you Mike Federale.
I was getting there and you totally cut me off.
I did yes, it on purpose, because yes. If I don't, you'll keep talking.
Well, that's what I do. Federale did a wonderful job. It was a great show. The staff was courteous and helpful and wonderful, and I kept running into Jason Mewes all weekend in like the strangest places. Yes, like I went to get coffee and Jason Mewes, it's like we were on the opposite ends of a cartoon loop.
Do you know why?
I was coming because he was right there. No, he was right next to our table. But like, he was coming and going. As I was coming, he was going. It was very strange.
You're like the Earth 2 Jason Mewes.
Yes.
I told him that. I said, we are like Bob, my friend Bob and I do a podcast, and I'm like the not silent, silent Bob. And he's like Jay. So I was like, yeah, like that you should come meet him because you guys have almost the same voice. Like, the first time I heard the dude talk, I was like, that guy sounds like Jason Mewes.
Nah, man, we're just both dudes with gravelly voices. But it was cool. Like, I just kept seeing him and I didn't say anything to him because, like, I was getting coffee. I was leaving with coffee. He was getting coffee. I was coming back to my table from shopping. He was going to shop.
It's weird because if you guys combined, like, it would be like, you know, it would be bad.
Him going, like, I was coming out of the bathroom. He was walking into the bathroom. And we were on the reverse ends of a cartoon loop all weekend. It was really weird.
Well, that's how I talked to him. I was going to the bathroom. He's like, hey, dude, there's a line. And I was like, oh, I wasn't trying to cut you guys. He goes, no, it's cool. And I was like, cool. And I was standing there. And he was talking to some other dude. And then he's like, he said something. And then I was like, yeah. And he was like, yeah. And I was like, that's crazy. Like, I'm having a conversation with him. We're all getting ready to go pee. Like, this is just weird.
So. Well, you know the book, Everybody Poops. I'm sure you read that.
Yeah, I know. Even Jason Mewes pees.
Yeah. Even that should be the next book we write. Even Jason Mewes pees.
We have to get his permission to use his likeness. But.
Yeah, whatever. I'm sure we could. I mean, if we pay him enough, I'm sure he'll do it. But yeah, so we got a great show coming up. Christopher Sabella is going to be on. What a time, what a guy, what an interview. And I guess you can hear that now. All right, and our guest this week on the Word Bros podcast, you know him from his work at Marvel and DC and his Image books and all kinds of stuff at Oni, all over the place. But he is here to promote his Kickstarter for his book, Short Order Crooks. He is world renowned. Everybody knows him. Everybody loves him. Ladies and gentlemen, Christopher Sabella.
Hey.
Yay! Hey, you come up and show like arms, you know.
So Chris, man, what's up, buddy? How's it going?
Pretty good, you know. Been a lazy day.
I see that your Kickstarter is moving and grooving here. You're up to what? I'm looking at it right now. You are at $12,688 with 13 days left. I don't want to jinx you on this one, but I think you're going to get it.
I think you got it.
Yeah. No, it seems pretty good. I don't know. Like, this whole thing's been kind of a nightmare. Like,
that's how Kickstarter goes.
So. Yeah, it's just like, you know, putting yourself out there for public scrutiny. Like, hey, look at me. Like, I might fail in front of all of you.
No, but I mean, what's the worst that can happen if you fail in front of everyone? I mean, honestly.
I mean, yeah, then I've failed. But, you know, I'm not really, you know, who amongst us is into public failure? Like, nobody is. So,
yes. Used to
it. But so, yeah, it seems like we'll do okay. So,
and this is something that you're doing with the dudes from Two Headed Press. Tell me about that, man, because I saw you guys launched that last year was it NYCC?
No, it just happened that we launched it right before.
Okay. Comic-Con. Yeah, tell us about that, because that sounds like, I mean, you got a lot of really great creators on that. How did that brainchild come together?
Well, before he starts telling you about that, maybe we should tell people who's all part of Two Headed Press.
Well, yeah, Chris can tell us that too.
All right, okay, great. I'll hook you up. So yeah, Two Headed Press is me, Ed Brisson, Teeny Howard, Ryan Ferrier, Fabian Rangel Jr., and Kurt Piers. And we're all comic book writers. And we decided basically to form a collective because we had all been talking about crowdfunding books. So something inspired us to say, like, hey, like, if we marshal our forces together and like we put all our books out under this sort of imprint label, then it gives the book sort of a mark of quality, is like, you know, hey, look, they've already, you know, this Two Headed Press has already had four things successfully funded and have delivered. And, you know, I like these two books, so why don't I try these two books out? So that was kind of the basic thinking of it.
It is genius. It is genius. I mean, you guys are all great creators. I know Ryan. I've met Fabian once or twice. And like, the hustle that all of you guys have is just, I mean, legendary, dude. It is legendary hustle. So, I mean, I think I predict big things for you dudes, even though it's big things have already kind of happening. So my word is nothing. But yeah, man.
I'll take it.
Yeah, dude. Hey, any good graces that you can get, take.
So for our audience that's not familiar, could you name some of the things you've done before you did Short Order Crooks?
Yeah. So
promote your other work.
All right. So creator owned wise, I've done two books at Boom, one called Welcome Back, one called Dead Letters. I did a book that came out through Dark Horse called High Crimes. And we got nominated for two Eisners for that.
What?
I know, right?
That's impressive.
That's great.
Yeah. We lost to Sex Criminals.
But I mean, if you're going to lose, it's good to lose to Sex Criminals.
Honestly, like when we put that book back out, like I want to put like lost 2014 best new series lost to Sex Criminals.
Yeah, because I mean, that within itself is a badge of honor.
Yeah, like we're a runner up to Sex Criminals. Like, I'll take that.
Yeah.
I don't blame you.
Right now I'm doing a book at Oni called Heartthrob with Robert Wilson IV and Nick Filardi. And then I've done a bunch of other stuff. I've written Escape from New York, Captain Marvel, Fantastic Four. I did co-writing on those, Injustice Ground Zero, Suicide Squad, Most Wanted.
So how do you have time to do creator-owned stuff and start your own imprint when you're writing like almost every comic on the shelves every month? That's crazy, man.
Because comics is it's an illusion. Like, you know, like some of this stuff I, you know, wrote months and months ago. Some of it I wrote, you know, a year ago. And some, you know, I'm going to write this weekend and they'll start becoming comics next week. So every publisher has different publishing schedules and, you know, different amounts of lead time. So you're always, I don't know, I'm always working on something because who know? I mean, yeah, you don't know when this stuff is going to come out. So you just have to like, all right, well, I'm going to do as much of it as I can humanly do and still enjoy the fruits of my labor. So
that's awesome.
So when you write, so Bob and I are writers as well. So what we do, we co-write. So most of the time, like, we pass scripts back and forth. So when you co-write, what's your process like? How does that go? Does it depend on who you co-write with, or is there a specific process you like to follow?
No, not really. Like, the times I've done it, so I just co-wrote an issue of Detective with James Tynan.
Nice.
So yeah, that was really, and I got it really suddenly, and it was due like less than a week later.
Damn.
Yeah, it was quick turnaround. Yeah, but you know, that's how you know that's one way into the big two, is, you know, you have to be there, and you have, I mean, it's like your resume isn't just the book you turn in; it's also everything you do around it. So, like, if you're not crazy and you can like get ahead of deadlines, much less just hit deadlines, then you're fine. Sorry, I totally.
That's okay, man. I'm still impressed. I'm still impressed that you wrote an issue of Detective Comics.
Yeah.
Like, that's fucking crazy.
So for that one, like, James sent me, basically, like, he broke it down in chunks, like 5-page chunks. He was like, here's what happens in these 5 pages and then these, and like, here's what I think should happen, and giving me some lines and stuff, but basically left it a lot in my court. So I just went off and wrote the whole thing according to this loose outline. And then it got passed back to James, and then, you know, our editors had notes. So then I went back and rewrote according to everybody's notes, and then did it again.
So you had 8 people giving you notes on this book? That's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, but you know, that's one of the perks, actually, is like, I want more like hands-on editorial. I want them to tell me like, listen, this doesn't work, and here's why it doesn't work. Like, even just like what other people I think would consider like tossed off notes for my detective issue were all like really useful to me. They were like, you know, this doesn't do anything. Like, this is just a line that you put here. And I was like, no, that's fair. And like, so it pushes you to work harder. But like, I've also done co-writing where, like, on Captain Marvel, Kelly Sue and I sat down at the dining room table together. And
nice.
Like, she had the main plot, and then we broke it down sort of page by page. And then
did a Fraction walk by with the Eisner that he beat you for, just like kissing on it and rubbing
like,
it?
Oh, like showing it to you, being like, yeah.
This was before that.
Okay, all right.
So, would he do it now?
I don't think so.
No, I'm kidding.
I wouldn't rule it out. Matt and I have known each other long enough that, like, you could do something like that, and it's like, okay, that's fair.
He seems like that kind of dude, like, because he just loves life.
Like, have fun, yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, like, co-writing varies, but I mean, I usually try to, I find, like, I don't know, I've also done co-writing where it's like, hey, I'll write the first 10 pages and you write the back 10 pages.
We've done that, so yes.
And yeah, I feel like you have to really trust the other person and really have worked with them for a bit for that to work. On stuff like this where, you know, it can all come together really fast and you don't have a chance to work tightly together, then, you know, you basically, I think that's the way it works in the big two stuff, is basically like, here's everything that I thought of, you go write it, and then I'll point out like, okay, I don't think this works.
So one person basically working as editor, the other working as writer, and then
yeah,
you get the real editors in the mix too. So.
Right. Yeah. So that's basically how it works now.
Now, when you write something on your own, is it like that or is it different? Is it come more organically?
Yeah, that one, I mean, it's all basically the same process for like any of my solo stuff. I usually, I have composition notebooks. Just to show you, this is literally just sitting next to me on my table. I have.
God damn.
Oh my God.
And that's,
you know, you, and you like a stack you, of fucking notebooks.
You are keeping the notebook business in business, my friend.
Dude, it's great. Every back to school season, they all go on sale for like a quarter of people. And you just stock up, and then that's, you put pressure on yourself. You're like, okay, like now I have to fill these notebooks with something. That's a whole other discussion.
That's fantastic.
But yeah, basically I will, you know, I devote a notebook to every book I'm working on. And so I'll sit down and I'll do one page. I'll do the left facing page. I'll be roughly, okay, here's everything I need to do in this issue. And then the facing page, I'll do the page by page breakdown. And then like once I nail the page by page breakdown, I feel like I'm pretty much ready to go. And then I just sit down and try and knock it out. I've definitely gotten faster than when I started, but you know, there's some scripts just like don't come easy. And also I work really well with procrastination, like the pressure of like, oh shit, this is due in like 2 days. It's really good inspiration for me.
We are talking to Christopher Sabella. You can find him on Twitter at XTop. He is promoting his brand new Kickstarter, Short Order Crooks, which has about, by the time this comes out, maybe 7 days left. Get in on that now. There's some really great awards. I mean, you got some really great stuff here, man. And the book looks really great. How did this come together?
It's a thing that like been working on since 2010, maybe it was more 2011, but basically, yeah, Kelly Sue DeConnick and I came up with the idea together, and then Kelly Sue got really super busy, and so, but I couldn't get rid of the idea. I still really wanted to do it. So after a certain point, I remember going to her and being like, hey, remember that thing? At which we only called it Rockford Taco Truck.
That's a great name.
So I was like, I kind of want to move ahead with Rockford Taco Truck. And she's like, you totally have my blessings. Like, go for it. So then I started figuring out how to do it. And I pitched it without art to a publisher, and their immediate response was like, oh, we're already doing a book about food trucks. So
really multiple food truck book. That's interesting.
Zeitgeist strikes again.
Yeah, who knew?
I guess what was that Jon Favreau movie that shit really took off and everybody wanted to do?
Yeah,
everyone's like, let's do a food truck book.
That all that movie did was make me want a Cuban sandwich really bad.
I still haven't watched it, especially like now that I've started working on this book. I was like, I don't want.
It's actually really good.
Oh no, I'm sure it is. And like once I'm done, I can watch it. But like, I don't want that sneaking in.
Yeah, no, I feel you. No,
I don't blame you.
I feel you on that. Now tell us what Short Order Crooks is about.
It's a crime comedy cooking comic. And it's all set in Portland, and Portland has a really big food cart scene, so that felt like a good fit. But it's also kind of a private eye story, and kind of a buddy cop story, except our main character is this guy, Rockwell Granger, who's a chef, and he like owns his own food cart. He's living out his dream, which was like, you know, I just want to like cook for a living and I want to own my own restaurant. But like, he sucks at the customer service part of it.
Okay.
So he's not doing very well. And and besides, like he basically borrowed all this money to buy his food truck, and he owes all the money to these two loan sharks.
Oh.
who run the Portland food cart scene, and they kind of own all the best territory. And like, so if you're not in their territory, you can't. It's like gang wars, basically.
So except, yeah, it's like Scarface with food trucks.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So our main character, he basically, his loan sharks hire him. They'll say that they'll cut part of what he owes them off if he tracks down this rogue food truck pirate who's been in their territory. So he ends up hooking up with this not hooking up in the biblical way, but hooking up with this girl who breaks into his food truck. And so he hires her, and then basically they become like a detective team trying to try, and they're teaching each other how to cook and sort of learning how to get along. So it's, but like every issue will have, somebody will be cooking something and like we'll have a recipe for it at the back of the book.
That's awesome.
Like,
well, that's a really good idea.
So yeah, it's like there's a whole genre of it in manga. Like there's the cooking comics are a whole, you know, cottage industry.
Interesting.
So. I had no idea. I haven't, I don't read manga normally, so I can't say that.
Yeah, I've never actually read one, but I
just, I'm glad I'm not alone. I felt bad for a second. I was like, no, I'm being honest, you know.
No, you're fine.
Sounds lovely. So I will be entertained and hopefully well fed now when it's over. Now, have you tested out the recipes yourself? Like, have you gone in and made these things, or are you just letting anybody make whatever the hell they want to?
That would be a good trick, but no. I made
rat poison. Damn it. I poisoned my family.
It's like Minecraft with a food truck. My son, like, yeah. Stuff together. Okay, cool.
This is a simple recipe. You just pour a bleach into, I can't remember what it is, but.
I made a bomb. I'm on the FBI's most wanted list.
Yeah, for the. Isabella! I have like rough ideas for the first issue. I wrote the recipe. I put it because, Harper, who's the female half of our team, she's a vegetarian, so I had to think of it, and I'm not, so I had to think, what's a vegetarian meal I've made? But I did remember making this it's like this pulled pork barbecue, except it's not pork, it's this thing called jackfruit.
Okay,
what is the jackfruit?
Jackfruit is it's a fruit that
jackfruit, okay
yeah, like, but you can only get it at Asian grocery stores, and mm-hmm. It only comes in cans, but yeah, something about the texture of it is meat adjacent.
Interesting.
Crazy.
You know what? Yeah. The thing is, I like meat adjacent. I went to college in Richmond, Virginia, and they have a very big vegetarian scene, and they used to have Chinese food that was meat adjacent. And to be honest with you, it was better than the actual meat itself. So
it was actually.
Yeah. Panda Garden. Great stuff.
Yeah, I'm not opposed to vegetables. I just tend to like, I'm really a fan of meat, so that's awesome. I'm exploring a different side of myself with this book.
So you're growing as a creator and as a food connoisseur. So you're expanding your palate and your resumes. That's amazing. Yeah,
I'm becoming a better person.
A foodie and a comic lover.
So what you're saying is, if you don't fund this Kickstarter, you are preventing Christopher Sembella from becoming a better dude. And who wants that? I don't want that.
We all want to become
that on their head. Yeah.
You don't want that on your conscience. You need to put some money towards this guy.
So it's very cool. You got some great rewards here. The art looks fantastic. Where did you hook up with the artist on this? Her name is, I can't find it on the page because of my brain.
Well, the line artist is George Combatize.
Okay.
Colorist is Leslie Adlansky. I've just known them both. George and I have been wanting to work together on something for a while, and I had a false start with Short Order Crooks with another artist who, like, he did the first five pages and I liked them, but when it came time, because I couldn't find a publisher who was interested in it, I was like, we're gonna have to, you know, go an alternate method. Like, I had been talking about doing it as like a webcomic. I still wasn't quite sure how to do that, but I was like, we'll find a way to make money on it. Like, I'm not sure how, but we'll find a way. Mm-hmm. But that didn't, and understandably, he was like, yeah, I don't know that I can bet on that.
So, sounds like every pitch that Bob and I give to artists now. We have no idea how we're going to make any money, but if you trust us, wink, 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 we'll make some money. And
yeah, no, I mean, that's what I ended up telling George. Like, when I saw his, I don't know, when I knew I had, you know, these first five pages or six pages already written for Short Order Crooks, and I was like, what if I just gave them to George? I was like, that would be such a different book, like, because George's art is so, like, light and upbeat. And a lot of this story is just about, you know, like, people being sad about, like, their place in life and, like, kind of failing at the things they ostensibly love to do. So, but having George draw it was like, oh, this instantly everything looks a little bit better.
That's awesome.
And so, yeah, cool. And Leslie's a local colorist, and she assisted us on High Crimes, and I've been trying to get her on an actual comic. So it's been a couple of years in the making.
That's great. And it's cool to hear that, you know, because so much of this industry is a grind for people that are just starting out. And it's good to hear that it's not good to hear, but it's kind of refreshing to hear that, hey, no matter where you are in your career, no matter how big your bibliography may be, like everyone still kind of goes through the same thing. And you just got to keep doing what you're doing and keep doing what you believe in. That's very, I think that's a nice thing to hear, because you said you've been working on this since 2011. That's a long time, man, but you want to get it done and you want to see it through. And that's really awesome. So congratulations, hopefully. Yeah. But I think it'll work out. I got a good feeling.
Yeah.
It's also nice to know the hustle's the same everywhere. So it's nice to know that.
Yeah.
That like, when we struggle along as beginning creators, that we can see guys like Chris Sabella, that he also has the same struggles we do. That's also very inspiring.
Oh, yeah. I feel like unless you're at, you know, like a Brian K. Vaughan level, like, you're always, everybody out there is struggling. Like, some people hide it better. I'm very open about it. I try to, you know, be pretty public about, like, oh, yeah, shit is fucked. And there's a lot of creators who just, like, don't, you know, don't do that. But,
I saw the other day on Twitter, you woke up and you were like, hey, my pitch got accepted. That's awesome. I should just go back to bed. And I was like, that's still so cool to me that, like I said, your bibliography, as big as it is you still get that feeling. Like, you still, like, yeah, you know?
No, yeah. Every pitch is like, you know, it's like, I'm waiting to hear back on a pitch I sent to an editor like 2 weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago now. And it's, you know, all I can think is like, this would be such a cool book, like, and you should want to do it. But, you know, you can't, that same editor, like, shot down a pitch I sent them like a couple of weeks before that. So it's, you know, that's why I'm trying to do like Kickstarter stuff, is like, you know, it's also just like, I want to make as many books as I humanly can, and trying to find new ways to pay for this stuff.
Yeah.
It's like, totally. Well, it, like, Kickstarter is no longer like a weird anomaly. It's now like part of the industry, and it's, you know, a thing that most people are familiar with. So why not finally? It was just mostly like, I need to do it sooner than later, if only to find out like, oh, this is not viable for me and I should not pursue this at all.
Now, explain pitching, because we know what it is, but people who listen to the pod may not understand how that works in comics, because I think the vast comics reading audience thinks that you just get handed books, and that's not the case. So I would rather a pro explain pitching.
Yeah, I mean, the majority of pitching that I've done has been on creator-owned books. So I've done some pitching at the big two, which is different, which is more what you described, where they are bringing you something and are like, you know, write us a pitch, and like, you'll be up against, they never tell you how many other people, but it's always just like, yeah, do you want to pitch on this? So for creator own stuff, it's a bit different, because you're basically, you have to sell an editor, not just an editor, but also, you know, like their boss. And I mean, you have to sell a whole publishing team that, on your idea. So the way I do it pretty, I've worked, so DC has like kind of a template, and Vertigo has a template, and Black Mask has a template. And at some point I want to like sit down and work out a new pitch, but the one I do is the one I learned from Jason Aaron, which is it's a 3-point thing, and you put the concept at the top, and that's one section. And basically, you know, in like a paragraph, you're explaining like, here's the world I'm building. Like, here's in grand, if you know, it's the elevator pitch. It's,
yeah.
You only had 2 minutes to sell somebody on your book. This is what it is. And then there's the story, and that's the biggest section. And that's basically where you spell out like, you know, This is a story about so-and-so, starts here. Here's where I see it going. Here are, you know, other important characters and stuff like that. And then I always, and then the third part is the hook, where you're sort of, then you have to get into a marketing mindset and you have to figure out like, and a lot of it always comes down to, it's like blah, blah meets blah, blah, blah. because that's just like the easiest language for everyone to understand. But, you know, I also use that to sort of say like, you know, people who like the show Hannibal might like this, or, you know, here's some of the genres that I'm smashing together.
Okay. It gives you kind of, it gives the person who's reading the pitch kind of a frame of reference.
Yeah. Like how, here's how I plan on approaching it.
Okay.
And yeah, like, I mean, the trick, the hardest part of a pitch is you're supposed to get it. It's supposed to be one sheet. Like, they're supposed to just be able to print out one page, and like, and I'm too wordy of a writer. I still can't like, I've learned to like shift fonts. It's like being back in high school. It's like, well, this paper needs to be 7 pages, and it's like, okay, well, like, I'm going to dial up the margins. and the font's going big. So, except in reverse, it's just like, yeah, everything, you have to go over it over and over, and keep trimming anything that's non-essential and make sure that anything that's super critical is in there. And I think like the pitch that just got shot down, I think I screwed up because I didn't put this one element in it that I think really would have made it feel like a different book to them. So it's just a learning process. You just, you know, I still suck at pitching.
Because it's all, because at the same time too, it's a whole different skill set. Like you can write a great script. You can write, you know, wonderful pages of dialogue and panel descriptions. But at the end of the day, you're almost like a salesman. Like you're writing a sales pitch.
Uh-huh. Right.
So, and I've heard of pros that actually hire people to write pitches for them.
That's crazy.
I mean, more power to them. I mean, if I could afford it, I'd fucking do that. But, you know, I have to, like, letter my own books. I can't fucking outsource pitch. And I feel like you have to, you know, you have to just, like, slog through it. And at some point, I don't know that I'm good at pitches now, but I feel like I'm a little bit better than I was. I hit this wall somewhere in February. And it coincided with like a big depressive streak, but basically I had like all these pitches that were all about 70% done, but I'd just not taken them the 30%. It was just getting put off by like, you know, working on Injustice Ground Zero and stuff like that. So finally I was just like, I was so depressed and I was just like, you know what? I'm just going to write my way out of it. I'm going to take from Friday to whenever I pass out on Sunday, I'm just going to write pitches. And I wrote five pitches that weekend. And like so far I've sold, I think 2 of them.
That's almost half, man. That's great.
Yeah. And a third one, we're going to pitch to Image. A fourth, I'm still waiting to hear on. And yeah.
That's great, man.
So, I mean, it's just, you know, I don't know that I still get terrified about having to sit down and write pitches, but I don't know.
Can't be scary. And like you said earlier, this is a failure business. I mean, most of the time you're going to fail and you're going to fail miserably. And like with a Kickstarter, there's chances you could fail publicly. And failure casts a long shadow, man. Like sometimes it really does. So mm-hmm. You just got to kind of fucking sack up and do it. And you're doing it, man. And I'm really happy for you. Hopefully all your pitches land, and hopefully this Kickstarter gets funded. It's on Kickstarter right now. They've got about maybe probably seven days by the time this comes out. So by then you'll be posting stretch goals and all kinds.
We got our stretch goals and they're nice. Like locked in. So like, yeah, ultimately like we need 24,000 to pay everybody, but this way, at least, like, the art team gets paid. I'm going to make no money. Like, at some point, I will see a dollar from this. But, like, this is all free work for me. But, you know, that's what you have to do if you want to get a book made sometimes.
Yeah. And you've got some great reward tiers on here. You've got some variant covers from some nice people. A friend of mine, Brian Level, is doing a cover for you. So that's pretty cool. Brian's a good dude. How'd you hook up with Brian?
Brian and I have been buddies for a while. Yeah, it's funny. Like, I think we'd gotten to know each other on Twitter. I mean, not I think we did. But he like DM'd me. This is a couple of years ago. He DM'd me. He's like, "Hey, like, me and my wife are coming to Portland for a couple of days. Do you want to hang out?" And I was like, "Yeah, sure." And then, like, a couple of days later, he like DMs me. He's like, "Okay, well, like, here's the Airbnb we're staying at. Like, and I'll be free after like 11 p.m." So I go to pick him up, and like he comes out, gets in my car, and I'm like, "Hey," and he's like, "Hey," and then I'm like, "Have we ever actually met before?" And he's like, "No, we haven't." And I was just like, "Oh, okay." Like, but yeah, it was just like I felt natural enough with him that I hadn't realized that I was like, "Oh, I've never actually met this dude." It could just be anybody getting in my car.
And here he is. And Brian is, I mean, for those of you that don't know Brian, like, he's a tattoo artist. He's covered in tattoos from head to toe. Like, if you saw him coming at you on a dark street, you'd probably walk to the other side. So, I mean, like, you know, Brian's he could be a scary looking cat and you guys just hit it off. That's awesome.
Yeah, and then I got lucky, and when I did my Suicide Squad story at DC, I asked if I could pitch an artist, and they were like, "Sure." And I asked if Brian could do it, because he'd been doing some work at DC, but not like full issues. So, and luckily they loved his stuff, like I loved his stuff. So we got to do 40 pages of Killer Croc.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
that's awesome. Yeah, Brian's good people, man. And you know what? This is the first time we've actually met, but you seem like a good dude. And you know what? We're rooting for you. And
thank you.
We appreciate you coming on. If you want to get in on this Kickstarter, just go to Kickstarter, search Short Order Crooks. 120 page original graphic novel could be yours. It looks fantastic, and
from the Kickstarter, it looks like you can get his other works too.
Yeah, dude, you can get all kind. You're giving it all away, my friend.
Yeah, like, we have a brand new comic that Jonathan Brandon Sawyer and I have been working on for the last 2 years. That's debuting physically at Heroes, but like, people can snag.
I've seen that. What is that called? The guy with on the motorcycle with the bats behind him and stuff like that. That looks dope.
Yeah, it's called Running Blood.
Oh wow.
No, what's that about?
What's about?
Yeah. I'm not gonna say for that one I'm not really, I don't know. I feel like Jonathan's art is beautiful enough that I don't even have to pitch that book. Literally all I have to do is like show someone the cover and just like, "Look at this." Like, of course you want to give us money for this.
I mean, dude, when I saw the cover, I was like, "I'd buy that." Like, that looks awesome. Yeah, you know?
Yeah. I think the cover really does its job. But basically it's Jonathan and I doing it's our version of Thelma and Louise, I guess, but with lucha masks and fast cars. It's also like a grindhouse movie. That's, I don't know. Yeah, we just kind of like went for it, and the whole premise is kind of based on a joke that we came up with at Heroes like 2 years ago. So yeah, and somehow we've turned it into an actual comic. So
there you go. That's awesome. Yeah, you want to give anybody your con schedule? Where are you going to be at this summer? You mentioned Heroes. I know you're going to be there. Where else are you appearing?
I think that's basically it. I might go to Baltimore. I'm possibly moving across the country, so not really scheduling myself too heavily.
I've heard rumors, rumblings, if you will, that you might be moving to Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
Why Kentucky? I live in Cincinnati and I never go to Kentucky, only if I have to. And there's no reason to go to Kentucky. Why?
Guys, you can buy a house in Ludlow, Kentucky for $40,000.
You've been talking to fucking Level, because he lives in Ludlow.
I went and stayed with him, and we were out on his porch first day I was there, and the house next to his had a for sale sign. And jokingly, I was like, what if I bought that house, moved in right next to you? He's like, you know how much they want for that house? $60,000. He's like, and you can rent out, like, it's a two-family house, so you can rent out the top and use that money to pay your mortgage.
Listen, Brian Level is like the unofficial mayor of Ludlow, Kentucky. He just tries to get all of his,
he just tries to get all of his friends
to move there. Look, I'm just going to tell you this. I live in Cincinnati. I lived in Kentucky for a year. Just go across the river. It's a little more expensive, but at least you can say you live in Ohio. That's all I'm saying.
I don't like, I am at the point where I don't give a shit where I live. Like, I live in Portland, which, like, when I got here was still like a rat town. And in the 6 years that I've lived here, has gotten a TV show, and like my rent has like almost tripled.
Whoa.
It's bullshit. Like, I want to live in a fucking nowhere town. Like, I want to be able to own my house without having to like I will be paying 1/5 of my rent in my mortgage.
No, I will play devil's advocate to Bob and say I live in the middle of nowhere. And when I say, to get to my house, I was telling like a guy that we know, Drew, I was telling him, I was like, take a left at the cornfield. And he said, he got here and he's like, man, I thought you were just like, cause you always joke around. I thought you were fucking with me when you said take a left at the cornfield. I was like, no, I was being completely honest when I said take a left at the cornfield. So if an alien abduction happens to me or something, that's likely where I live. Like, you know, they tend to only abduct like yokels. So like,
sure, that's sure.
So it could happen. The beard, yeah, kind of like gets some, you know, like, so the aliens are attracted to beards, I guess. I don't know. So that could happen. But living in the middle of nowhere has its benefits.
Yeah, no, I'm totally – and I have the kind of job where I don't have to stay here, so.
It's true.
That is true.
And I'm just saying.
I know.
Don't let that level charm get you, buddy.
But that's the other thing is, like, if you're only paying 40 grand for a house, like – if you want to leave, it's not that much of a like albatross on you. Not as much as like, oh, I paid $250,000 for this house. Like,
all right.
And Bobby wants other cool comic dudes to hang out with. That's why.
Well, I mean, Ludlow's right across the river. I can get there in 10 minutes. In my mind, it's just the stigma of living in Kentucky. That's all.
Dude, I drove through Cincinnati like last summer, and like, you don't have a shit ton to crow about.
Look,
like,
look, all I'm saying is Rand Paul ain't my representative, brother.
I'm just saying, like, you know, Cincinnati is like, there's a lot that I liked about it, but also like, there's a lot of sort of garbagey stuff going on in it.
Yeah, no, Cincinnati is there are places that are quite frightening. But again, no, it's just the stigma because it ain't Kentucky, bro. That's
the coolest.
That's kind of why I love it, because like, never in like my most like stoned fantasy would I ever have written a narrative where like, oh, and then I moved to Kentucky.
Believe me, when my wife and family first moved here, there were days where I would just look out, because in the wintertime, I'm sure Portland gets the same way. It's just gray, like the gray just hangs in the river valley, and you don't see the sun for like 4 months.
I love that.
And it's cold, and it's dreary, and it's awful. And I'm just thinking,
I like that too. Actually,
how the fuck did I end up here, man? Like, where did it all go wrong? I'm in fucking Kentucky, but it worked out. You know?
Yeah, no, like, and this is me doing things right. This is me being responsible. It's like, I am moving away from an unhealthy situation that is Portland. And I'm going to go, I'm going to start my own Portland. Like, I'm going to just convince people.
Start my own Portland.
Hey, yeah, man, if the house next to you comes up for sale and you don't mind little kids, man, let me know. I'll be right.
That's
there.
Fine.
That won't be far from Bobby either, so that'd be good. But like, the coolest thing,
drug smoke and loud music. All right, then we'll get along fine.
What's the name of your town going to be then? I mean, if you're coming up with your own Portland, you got to come up with a cool name. That's part of it.
No, but Portland doesn't have a cool.
Portland's kind of a cool name. They have the Trailblazers, which is nice, you know.
What?
I don't know. That's all I know about Portland is the Trailblazers.
Yeah, but like, the Portland is like, yeah, Stump Town, I guess. We have
Rip
Stump
City.
We have Stump Town.
Yeah,
they have Stump Town.
I don't know. Once I get to Kentucky, then I'll figure it out.
All right.
But the coolest, I have to tell you, the coolest Cincinnati story was one day Bob texts me and he's like, there's a fucking coyote in my neighbor's yard.
Coyote in my neighborhood, which is
and I was like, pretty awesome. I live in the fucking woods and we don't have coyotes. Like, I've seen a fox. Like, that's as big as the canines get. And he's like, no, it's a fucking coyote. He takes a picture. He's like, that's a fucking coyote.
I named him.
That's we have a lot of those in Portland.
Coyote?
I've seen more than my fair share of coyotes just like driving home at night.
Yeah, it's sad.
There's a coyote in the middle of the road and he like does not give a fuck about you.
No, but he's good. And he's probably going to eat your neighbor's dog. So there you go. Well, Chris, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. We really, really appreciate it. Anytime you want to come back and promote other things, or hey, even if when you move to Kentucky, we can be best fucking friends.
Sure.
That'll be awesome.
All right. Awesome. Ladies and gentlemen, Chris Abella, thank you so much, buddy.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
All right, that was Chris Sabella. What a great job. What a great dude. What a fantastic guy. And check out his Kickstarter. It's on Kickstarter right now. Just search Kickstarter for Short Order Crooks. Give him a couple bucks and you can get a 120-page graphic novel. That's really great. And I was telling Kevin before I hit record again that it's really refreshing in kind of a weird way because I tend to I tend to get down when projects aren't moving along fast enough. And to hear him say that he's been working on books since like 2011 and they're just starting to kind of come to fruition. It's very nice to hear that no matter where you are, everyone goes through the same bullshit and you just got to keep pushing and keep working and keep writing. So that was really great to hear. So
it was really good to know that I wouldn't say you get down because when I get the text,
I get impatient. I just get impatient.
That's a better way to put it. You're like, man, fuck, I wish this was going faster. And I'm like, no, I get it though. Comics move slow. And you're like, yeah, but I want it to move faster. And I get that.
It's like, I'm a 7-year-old, but I want it now. But it's nice it gives you a different kind of perspective on the business because
it's the long game, sir, not the short game.
It is the long, it's a marathon, but fuck, it's a long marathon. But again, he's been working on these books and to hear him talk about like, well, I was working on this with Kelly Sue and then she got super busy, which has happened to us with people. And like, you gotta keep fucking grinding and keep working. And it just happens to everybody on every level. So it was just nice to hear. I really enjoyed that. That was really great.
It's refreshing to know that no matter where you are in comics, there you are.
Yes, exactly. And like you said, unless you're Brian K. Vaughan writing fucking
or Brian Michael Bendis or something like that, you're in better places in comics than all of us are. And it's also nice to know that when you have a pro like Chris Sabella tell you, like, hey man, I get down about this stuff too, then that makes you feel all that much better about like your crappy pitch you're trying to write. You know, like, I'm not getting my pitches accepted by editors. I'm like, oh, well, he's not the only one. So that's good, man. It's good to know. And I don't mean good to know in a bad way. It's good to know that like he keeps trying. So you too should keep trying to get your pictures up.
Exactly. And again, what a great dude. I'm emailing him right now. If you heard the banging on the keyboard, that was me. Just telling him like, that was a fantastic interview. I'm really happy we had him on. And yeah, man, I guess that's a great place to end, right?
Yeah.
So let's.
Thanks again for listening to Word Bros.
Yeah, let's wrap this puppy up. We'll talk to you guys next Wednesday. I believe we're having the editor in chief of Alterna Comics on,
Peter Cimetti.
Peter Cimetti, and we're also having the writer and creator of The Amazing Age, Matthew David Smith. He's the writer and creator of Amazing Age. Alterna's doing some really great things over there with their newsprint book, so we wanted to have those dudes on and have kind of like an Alterna Comics Day. So that's going to be really exciting. So
it'll be awesome. Yes. So thank you again for listening to Word Bros, and we are the Word Bros, and we are out. Word Bros.
You just ran with that exit, huh?
I did.
You're listening to the Word Bros Podcast, thewordbros.com.